Lincoln. You heard me. Abraham Lincoln was a socialist. You heard me right. Hey, welcome to the job-crushing Mike Malloy Show. Delighted to have you all here tonight. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, your friendly citizen, investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, making trouble and raking the muck all night long tonight as we sit in and as we continue our broadcasts from the left coast as the Malloys are off. Tony, where are the Malloys? Aren't they down there we go. Ah, yes, there they are. Yes, the Malloys are out progressive cruising this week. They're on a progressive cruise in the Caribbean with a bunch of other progressives. So we're here with... All right, we got the idea. They're cruising down there. They'll be back next week. Until then, you got me, Brad Friedman, as I say, broadcasting from the left coast at the lovely studios in Los Angeles of K-Talk AM 1150. Delighted you could be with us here tonight. We have a big, big show because, as I say, Abraham Lincoln was a socialist. I'll prove that to you in a few minutes, and we'll be talking more about that sort of, kind of, in a way, with our own Ernest Canning, our legal analyst, legal affairs analyst from bradblog.com. He'll be joining us a little bit later, among other guests. Our phone numbers tonight, 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Write it down, truth seekers. You may want it later, if only to yell at me, which you're welcome to call up and do. You can also join the chat room over at bradblog.com, where I can't get to because my web browser is frozen. Thanks for nothing, Firefox. You get what you pay for. Anyway, I'll be in there soon enough. I hope you'll join us. Come on by bradblog.com, the top item there. Say hello to everyone. It's probably lively as usual, but I wouldn't know. I can't get in. Desi Doyen will be there, though. She'll be your lovely moderator in the chat room tonight. She'll also be screening your calls and all of that stuff. You can also Twitter me at the Bradblog. That is not frozen. That I can look at. Got any thoughts throughout the night? Stop by Twitter and shoot them to me at the Brad Blog. Please make them 140 characters or less. Okay, all the business out of the way? Yes, sort of, kind of, for now. Lincoln was a socialist. Abraham Lincoln was a socialist. I was reminded of this morning when I woke up, and of course I checked my Twitters, and there was, I think it was Mark Noller of CBS News who had Twittered that Joe Biden in Philadelphia, where he was introducing the Obama plan for to put $8 billion, I believe, into high-speed rails. Joe Biden mentioned, I think he said, if I'm quoting him correctly, thank God that Abraham Lincoln built the Transcontinental Railroad. Yes, thank God indeed. Thank God indeed for that big government socialist program, otherwise known as the Transcontinental Railroad, which we still use today. At least when we are not using the other socialist program. That's right. That would be Dwight D. Eisenhower's superhighway program that also links the country together. That other socialist, Dwight D. Eisenhower, the pinko lefty liberal Ike. So you got Abraham Lincoln, socialist. Dwight D. Eisenhower, socialist. And of course, last night we were talking about Ronald Reagan. Since it was his 100th birthday, I don't know if you heard, but it was his 100th birthday over the weekend. And one of the things the right-wingers forgot to mention was that Ronald Reagan, also a big government socialist. Yes, he supported the bailout of Chrysler to the tune of billions of dollars. He bailed out and, yes, took over the Continental Illinois Bank in 1984. Do I have my numbers right? Yes, 1984. So there you go. Some of the greatest socialists of our time. Abraham Lincoln, Dwight D. Eisenhower, Ronald Reagan, course, you would know that if you know anything about history. But the people talking about socialism as if it's communism, as if it's, you know, Pinko as a threat to the nation. These right wingers out there, these Republicans who say this crap just for political gain because they have no ideas. If you listen to them, then all of these guys are socialists and they all hate America. So, and you might realize these things, and people who have been fooled into buying into the teabagger nonsense would know better if they had a media who told them what the hell was going on. But such as we do not have such a media, we have a media, we have a right-wing media, we have round-the-clock 24-7, unless you're lucky enough to tune in to the Mike Malloy Show, and a very few, a very precious few other programs on your mainstream public airwaves. Unless you happen to find us, chances are, like the rest of America, you're listening to right-wing radio telling you lies about Ronald Reagan, about Abraham Lincoln, about socialism, about one thing after another. They ain't telling you the truth. They're either telling you lies or they're not telling you anything at all. Like what, for example, Brad? Oh, I'll tell you what. One of the things that we're going to be talking about tonight, and this, of course, is breaking news. Breaking news. You'll only hear it right here on the Mike Malloy Show. But we have word tonight that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been, for the last 20 years, lying, hiding nearly $1 million that she received, actually her husband received, from Acorn. And yet, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a justice on the Supreme Court, failed to include that on her disclosure forms, failed to include the fact that she was, her husband was receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars per year from this far-right leftist socialist America-hating group, otherwise known as Acorn. Well, this, of course, is just breaking. So you'll be hearing this all day tomorrow, round the clock, 24-7, of course, across the airwaves, Rush Limbaugh, 24-7, Fox News. It's a good thing that the Barack Obama is in office. Otherwise, who knows who would be appointed in her place once she is forced to step down, once she is forced to resign, and perhaps face criminal charges, because it was, in fact, criminal to falsify her disclosure forms, as she did by checking where it said non-investment spousal income. She checked none. Year after year after year, she failed to disclose this information. And, you know, she may be a Democratic appointee, but I don't care. I'm independent. I call them like I see them. This was against the law. This was a crime. If Rush Limbaugh tomorrow comes out and calls for Ruth Bader Ginsburg to step down, I would have to agree with him. It's a crime. 20 years, right? She's made decisions on the court, you know, that affected, of course, Acorn, groups like Acorn and things that they do. And she didn't feel it was necessary to tell anybody about it. Of course, she says it was just a misunderstanding, an omission. She didn't know that she had to put these numbers down. But you know what? It's her job as a Supreme Court justice. I'm sorry. It's her job as a Supreme Court justice to know these things. In any case, it is a crime. It is a federal crime. It is a serious crime. She could face up to 1 year in jail for each of these failures to disclose, up to $50,000 for these failures to disclose. And I don't know if you agree with me, but I just, you heard it here first. Okay. I guess I need to fess up here. It wasn't really Ruth Bader Ginsburg who hid that information. It would be illegal had she done so. It would be a crime. It would be against the law. But it wasn't Ruth Bader Ginsburg. It was Clarence Thomas. And it wasn't actually Acorn. It was hundreds of thousands of dollars that his wife received from the Heritage Foundation, a right-wing think tank that, well, you know, it made a lot of money, frankly, stand to make a lot of money after the Citizens United decision earlier this year. I guess it was last year already, wasn't it? So some almost $1 million, certainly in the last 6 years, something like $600,000. Clarence Thomas didn't mention it on his disclosure forms. So, no, it wasn't Ruth Bader Ginsburg. It wasn't Acorn. It wasn't Planned Parenthood. It wasn't any of the groups that would have driven the right crazy, that would have set them on fire, that would have made them demand that Ruth Bader Ginsburg step down, that would have made them demand that Eric Holder at the Justice Department brought criminal charges. It was, in fact, Clarence Thomas and Heritage Foundation and his wife and her group, the Liberty Coalition. Oh, a lot more on that straight ahead. Didn't get to sleep that night till the morning came around. Sit out one, but I take my... Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy all week long. Glad you can be with us here. And of course, if you were listening before the break, the breaking news that Elena Kagan, the Justice Elena Kagan, lied on her disclosure forms during her confirmation hearings. She didn't talk about the hundreds of thousands of dollars that she received from Planned Parenthood. She just left it off her disclosure forms. Okay, no, she didn't. It was Clarence Thomas, and it was on his disclosure forms when he was nominated in 1991 that he left off about his wife, Virginia, receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars from the Heritage Foundation. Of course, had it been Elena Kagan, or had it been, as I said before the break, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who lied like this, who actually committed crimes, the right wing would have been all over this, and I suspect whoever it was, whether it was Ginsburg or Sotomayor or Kagan or anybody else, that they probably would have resigned by now because they have some self-respect and they have respect for the rule of law, unlike apparently Clarence Thomas. Now, I'm going on and on about this, and we're going to be speaking with Bob Edgar from Common Cause shortly after the bottom of the hour break. It was, in fact, Common Cause who discovered this, well, I would call it, he calls it, this is what Clarence Thomas calls it anyway, inadvertent omission. He inadvertently omitted 20 years of information that people who came before him on the Supreme Court might have wanted to know about, so they could have asked Clarence Thomas to recuse himself, let's say, from the Citizens United decision, since he stood to profit from the Citizens United decision, which found that corporations, well, since they're people, according to the Supreme Court, they can give as much money as they want. It's free speech. They can give as much money as they want secretly to these political organizations. Political organizations like Clarence Thomas' wife's Virginia collected a salary from. But of course, Clarence Thomas didn't talk about it. He said no on his disclosure forms. He said no, there was no spousal income from non-investment income, no salary. Well, the fact of the matter is, this is a crime. And it has not been reported as such, and I believe there's a couple of reasons for that. Among them, the first report that came out on this was from the Los Angeles Times, and the LA Times quoted a law professor by the name of Stephen Lubet from Northwestern Law University School of Law, who I've tried to contact him, but he hasn't written me back. He hasn't called back. Basically, directly, he said, this is not a crime. This is a crime. This is in no way a crime, what he did. Well, if you look at the disclosure forms, and we have them at bradblog.com, you can see quite clearly that It was a crime. Stephen Lebet, here's the exact quote. Failure to disclose spousal income, quote, is not a crime of any sort. But if you look about half an inch below Clarence Thomas's signatures on these forms year after year after year, it says, note, any individual who knowingly and willfully falsifies or fails to file this report may be subject to civil and criminal sanctions, according to 5 U.S.C., that's United States Code, paragraph statute 104. And that reference there says that, in fact, it is a there are civil and criminal sanctions, according to 5 U.S.C. 104. Failure to report means there'll be a fine of not to exceed more than $50,000 and imprisonment for not more than 1 year. Of course, elsewhere in the code referring to this, it also talks about prison for longer than that. Well, was it a crime? Was it knowingly and willfully that he falsified these papers, these documents? I don't know. Has anybody in the corporate media tried to find out if it was knowingly and willfully? According to the Department of Justice Prosecutor's Handbook, people like attorneys are understood to be knowledgeable in the law. Well, he's the Supreme Court Justice. Do you think he was knowledgeable about this law? I don't know. I would like this to be investigated by the media, by the House Judiciary Committee, by the Department of Justice. Let's find out. It would certainly be investigated if it was a Democratic-appointed Supreme Court justice who had done this. We're going to talk to Bob Edgar about exactly this right after this break. Stay with us.
All of my life I have searched for clarity. I have wrestled with two paths buried deep inside of me. I lost some rounds, been knocked around, felt my share of defeat. Yet somehow I've always managed to get back on my feet.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy. Yes, we are searching for clarity. Yes, we are trying to figure out how it can be that a justice of the Supreme Court for 20 years can falsify forms, financial disclosure forms, year after year after year, not let folks know that his wife was receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars from right-wing organizations who would benefit from the decisions he would make on the Supreme Court. And why it is that the media are not discussing this matter. I just highlighted what the crimes actually were that I am accusing him of. I was happy to see Nancy Goldstein today at Alternet picked up on this story. And she wrote an article titled, "Why Does Clarence Thomas Get Away with Breaking the Law as His Wife Shills for Wealthy Right-Wingers?" And I'm quoted in that report as I've been trying to ask this same question and trying to highlight the fact that this is a crime, despite what that Northwestern Law University professor had said when the story originally broke in the L.A. Times. It broke in the L.A. Times in no small part because the good folks at Common Cause noticed this little problem and alerted the media to it and have been asking for some kind of accountability as they hold power accountable. And to that end, I'm joined now by the president and CEO of Common Cause, Mr. Bob Edgar, former Congressman Bob Edgar, actually, now the president of Common Cause. Hey, Bob, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Brad, it's good to be with you tonight.
Great to have you here. And great, by the way, a great thanks for all of the good work that you're doing on this case, on the Koch Industries business. Really trying to, you know, hold some feet to the fire here. Okay. I don't know. Did you get a chance, Bob, to look at the legal case, if you will, that I drew out last week at bradblog.com on this matter?
Yeah, I did look at the legal case. As you know, Brad, I'm a preacher, not a lawyer.
And, I'm a blogger, not a lawyer. So, I'm the
Forrest Gump of religion and politics, and okay. Had a chance to look at your blog. Let me just say first for your listeners that we came across this issue a little bit by accident. A couple Thursdays ago, we had sent a letter to the Justice Department asking them to look at the conflict of interest between Justice Scalia and Justice Thomas attending secret meetings of what has become a biannual effort by Charles and David Koch to bring Supreme Court justices, leaders of the House and Senate, corporate leaders, bloggers, and conservative TV personalities to strategize on how they can manipulate public policy. Mm-hmm. And we're asking the Justice Department to investigate what we see as smoke of a conflict of interest. If they find fire, we want them to make that aware to the Supreme Court, and we want them to vacate the Citizens United decision, which gives corporations for the first time opportunity to use their corporate treasuries politically.
And on that, Bob, because I have a question. On the letter that you sent to the DOJ in this regard, you talk about vacating this decision. The DOJ can, on their own, vacate a Supreme Court decision?
No, they can't, because what they can do is they can get the Solicitor General to take that to Justice Roberts, the head of the Supreme Court. And the more we can get the specifics out in public, the more pressure we put on the Supreme Court. We think that it has become highly partisan. When you and I were in elementary and secondary school, we knew that the Supreme Court justices were supposed to represent all the people of the United States, not one political ideology. And as president of Common Cause, my board and my staff decided that we were going to step up to the plate and really raise the issue. And in the course of raising that issue, we checked out the financial statements of all of these judges, and we were just astonished to find the Supreme Court only keeps these records for access for the last 6 years. And for the last 6 years, Justice Thomas checked a box which said, my wife has no outside income. And we couldn't believe it. We checked the IRS 990s from the Heritage Foundation. We knew that she had other sources of income. And just for those 6 years, we discovered more than $600,000 that she had received. We did that on a Friday, and by Monday morning, Justice Thomas had corrected at least 13 years of back financial records. And we just feel that he has, for a long time, misrepresented himself. If he was a regular federal judge, if he was a member of Congress, he'd be up on charges by now.
Yeah, it sure seems to me that would be the case. And frankly, it seems to me that would be the case even if he was a Supreme Court justice, as long as he was one appointed by a Democrat. But yeah, that's maybe just my opinion there. But you mentioned, okay, by Monday, you guys broke the story over the weekend. The LA Times picked it up over the weekend. By Monday, then, when the other folks jumped in, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post, AP, and so forth, they were all able to report that Justice Thomas had, he had taken care of this. It's all done, nothing to worry about, because he filed self-initiated amendments. But as I learned and as I reported at Brad Blog, it seems that the U.S. Judicial Commission, the group that handles these financial disclosures and so forth for the judiciary, somehow they came in on a Saturday to approve this, to receive these amendments from Justice Thomas. And when I tried to ask them, well, did he get special treatment? Literally, the public affairs director, after 3 minutes, and I was very polite, much more polite than I am here on the air, frankly, he hung up the phone on me, refused to answer this. It appears to me that Justice Thomas got some sort of special attention, that he was able to process these forms on a Saturday at a federal building so that by Monday the stories could come out and say, oh, everything's fine. Justice Thomas took care of it. And I think that feels to me like one of the reasons why the media don't seem to be looking into what appears to me at least to be a very serious crime.
Well, Brett, it's the alternative media that is really getting these stories out. The regular media is so caught up in corporate interest. We all know that our nightly news is bought and paid for by Disney. It's bought and paid for by General Electric. It's bought and paid for by Murdoch and others. And I think they don't see anything wrong with Supreme Court justice, not just in this case of not reporting accurately his financial statements, but the partisanship that has entered into the system.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of Justice Thomas, his wife, as soon as the Citizens United case came down, set up a group called Liberty Central, got money from corporate interests that she could not have gotten prior to Citizens United. And then when she got caught making a telephone call to one of the people who testified against her husband,
Anita Hill, yes,
in his confirmation, she abruptly left Liberty Central, and she's just now formed a new consulting group. And I was horrified to discover that on the 29th of January, she sent an email to all of the freshman members of Congress telling them that she wants to be the ambassador to the freshman Republicans, and she wants to service them. She wants to give them access to powerful people. And she's really stepping up her political activities. And it's clear that Justice Thomas wanted to hide some of her financial dealings, and now she wants to step out and be kind of the Pied Piper of the conservative Republican Tea Party gang.
Mm-hmm.
We think that's highly inappropriate. Not that she shouldn't have a right to her own opportunities to be a lobbyist. By the way, we can't find any registration of her as a lobbyist. But if she wants to get involved politically, then I think Justice Thomas has to decide whether or not he can be an impartial member of the Supreme Court, whether he can look at campaign finance issues that come before the court, and whether or not he needs to recuse himself from all future issues that have anything to do with the shaping of our political system.
We're speaking with Bob Edgar, president and CEO of Common Cause, a former congressman for 12 years from the great state of Pennsylvania. Bob, I'm still trying to figure out, when it comes to disclosure, when it comes to recusal, there really is no one else you can go to other than the Supreme Court justice themselves. They make the decision whether they will recuse themselves from any case, and there's nobody to appeal to above and beyond that, is there?
Well, unfortunately, our founding fathers did not clarify when they put together the separation of powers between the executive, the congressional, and the judicial. They didn't really put a mechanism in place, but we're going to go to the Senate and House Judiciary Committees.
Mm-hmm.
We're continuing to look at ways in which the Supreme Court justices clearly should be covered under the rules and regulations that would get any other federal judge impeached or indicted for this kind of activity. And we think that putting some public pressure now makes sense. I think you have to remember that the day that Thomas fixed all of his forms, Justice Scalia was up on Capitol Hill at Michelle Bachmann's invitation,
right,
talking to the Tea Party.
Yes.
What is it with Scalia and Thomas playing so much of a role in partisan political politics when they're supposed to be adjudicating. We're about to see health care go before the Supreme Court. Why can we trust the outcome of the Supreme Court's decisions if they're not based on the Constitution? They're, in fact, based on their own partisan political views.
Then the fact is that we can't. And our system was not built on trust. It was built on checks and balances. But there really seems to be very few checks or balances here. Now, a Supreme Court justice can be impeached, according to the Constitution. Am I correct on that one,
Yes,
Bob?
Public officials can be impeached. Impeachment starts in the House, and bill of impeachment would have to be brought. With the House being in the hands of very many new conservative members, it's unlikely that on this offense they would be impeached, or Justice Thomas would be impeached.
Right.
But that process can begin. What we're hoping is that the Attorney General will make a finding in the facts of conflict of interest, which go to the heart of what lawyers are supposed to look out for. And Attorney General Holder's in an interesting position because in the Citizens United case...
Hold the thought there, because I got to take a quick break. But we're going to come back, find out what the AG is saying in response to your query. Speaking with Bob Edgar of CommonCause.org, Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. A few more minutes with Bob Edgar right after this. Troublemaking and muckraking in the next hour as I'm joined by Ernest Canning to discuss, oh yeah, corporate personhood. Oh man, does it ever stop? I'm speaking with Bob Edgar, the CEO and president of Common Cause, former congressman, about 20 years of Clarence Thomas's financial disclosures. Which appeared to be falsified in that he did not report hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars that his wife received in salary from a lot of far right-wing groups who certainly stood to benefit from Thomas's decision on the Citizens United case, among others. And Common Cause has asked now the Attorney General to take a look at this and to see if, perhaps Citizens United ought to be vacated due to conflicts of interest of Clarence Thomas and Antonin Scalia. So, Congressman, what did response did you get from the from Eric Holder, from the Department of Justice, from the Solicitor General to Common Cause's letter?
No response to date. Today, members of Common Cause from across the country flooded the Justice Department to the point where they really could not accept any more phone calls or messages, simply asking for a face-to-face meeting with Attorney General Holter. As I was saying, when we got up to the break,
yeah,
Holter's in an interesting and very important place. The decision on Citizens United was a 5-4 decision. Had Sandra Day O'Connor still been on the court, the decision would have been 5-4 the other direction. The Justice Department was also on the side of the 4 votes. So he was involved in the process. His legal counsel, the Solicitor General, was involved in trying to get enough justices to block corporations from taking money. You're going to be talking about corporate personhood.
Mm-hmm.
My wife, who's a registered nurse, says she'll believe that corporations are persons the day after they have a colonoscopy. But that's another story. He also has a responsibility as a lawyer. All lawyers are trained to keep an eye out for conflicts of interest in all the cases that they try.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want him to investigate the conflict of interest. We want him to see what Clarence Thomas did, what Scalia did. Clarence Thomas says that while he went to the Koch brothers' events, he didn't participate in any of the strategy sessions. We have secondary conversations of people who say, oh, wait a minute, he was there for 3 days, full expenses paid by the Federalist Society, and we have some eyewitnesses that said he actually looked in to several of the strategy sessions. Mm-hmm. What were they trying to do? In 07, Scalia went. In 08, Thomas went. In 09, they had Citizens United in front of them, and they did an extraordinary thing. In June of 09, rather than deciding on a narrow case of Citizens United versus the FEC, they held it over and had an extraordinary session in September of 09, where they retried the case. And then by January of last year, they took a very narrow issue and broadened it to simply give corporations the ability to use corporate treasury. Were they influenced by the Charles and David Koch brothers and their seminars? Were they influenced by hanging out with the Tea Party? What was the reasons that they stated? And we believe that if there is a full investigation, they will find that there are issues where they should have recused themselves. And we're asking for a retroactive recusal and vacating of the decision. And in the meantime, we're asking them to continue to investigate the financial issues of Justice Thomas. Frankly, I asked the question in the media, if Justice Thomas couldn't fill out a simple financial disclosure form and check the right box about his wife's income, what other issues are coming before the court that he doesn't understand?
It's absolutely an incredible story. Please stop by commoncause.org. Click those buttons where they're calling for your help to sign the petitions and sign the letters. Bob Edgar, CEO and president of commoncause.org, thank you, sir, for joining us tonight and for all the good work you're doing. Let me know how we can help, sir.
Best wishes. Great to be with you.
All right. Okay, when we come back, more accountability, if we can find any. We'll be speaking with Ernie Canning, and I'll answer Bill O'Reilly's man's question that he left in the bradblog.com chat room about this issue. Stay with us. Much more straight ahead. Welcome back to hour number two of the Mike Malloy program. 6 minutes after the hour, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, your friendly investigative citizen journalist, troublemaker, muckraker from bradblog.com, and all-around swell fellow, broadcasting live from Los Angeles tonight as the Malloys are out and about on the Caribbean. They're having fun. They're just goofing off. Actually, they're... Oh, there we... Yeah, there we go. There. That's right. They're living it up. It's rum and Coca-Cola, and they're just having fun while we're here broadcasting. Delighted to be here. Actually, they're not having that much fun because they're on the cruise with a bunch of progressives, and they're working. They're actually talking about progressive things and ideas with folks like Bobby Kennedy and Kerry Harrison and Hal Sparks, and a bunch of good folks are on that cruise. And, of course, I'm being nice just because... Yes, I'm bitter they didn't invite me, but I better be invited next year. That's all I'm saying. Okay, we're going to be joined in a minute or two by Ernest Canning to talk about, well, corporate personhood and even military foreign aid. I'll get to that in a moment, but a couple of pieces of business here. Okay, you can. Let's see. Our phone number tonight is 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Write it down. And if you'd like to get in on this conversation, we'd love to hear from you. And let's see. Where's the other business? Here we go. We were talking in the last hour with Bob Edgar of Common Cause about these 20 years of Clarence Thomas flaunting the law, basically, by not reporting hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars that he received, that his wife received, from right-wing organizations, as Justice Thomas was sitting on the Supreme Court cases that would affect those right-wing organizations and the amount of money that they could receive. Now, Bill of Rights Man has asked in the bradblog.com chat room, which I hope you will stop by and jump into the chat there. Bill of Rights Man wants to know if Thomas, who corrected once the story came out, quickly got special treatment, according to my reporting at Bradblog anyway, got special treatment on a Saturday to amend his forms for the last 20 years, which include his nomination forms in 1991 that he also falsified. So Bill of Rights Man wonders if Thomas has to pay back taxes on these items that he didn't disclose. Well, no, he doesn't, because they weren't taxes. These were the financial disclosure forms that judges must fill out, all members of the judiciary, as I understand it, not just the Supreme Court, but all members of the judiciary need to fill them out and show where they get their money from, where their wife gets money from, so that when people come before the court, they can know if there is a potential conflict of interest and ask for the judge to recuse him or herself. Well, that couldn't happen here, because if you just went by Clarence Thomas's forms, you wouldn't know that his wife was working for this right-wing outfit, this Heritage Foundation, and Liberty Central, this Tea Party group that she formed. And now she's working as a, she claims she's working as a lobbyist, though, as Bob Edgar told us, she had not registered yet as a lobbyist. So, go figure. But anyway, so no back taxes, but it is a crime, as I spelled out in the first hour, and as I spelled out over at Brad Blog, you can look it up. And Justice Thomas should have known better, and what really is ticking me off is the fact that the media is not reporting it. They are just not covering the issue. They're not covering the criminal side of this issue, as I suspect they certainly would had the case been a Democratic nominee, because the right-wing media would be out there banging on this and forcing someone, whether it's the House Judiciary Committee or the DOJ, or the media itself, to actually investigate. So as long as someone is foolish enough to put a microphone in front of my face, I am going to call for accountability. I'm going to use our public airwaves to demand accountability. Whether it comes or not, I'm doing my job. I hope you will do yours. And to that end, I've got an item at the very top of bradblog.com right now that links over to Alternet, who did their job. Nancy Goldstein over there today wrote an article, "Why Does Clarence Thomas Get Away with Breaking the Law as His Wife Shills for Wealthy Right-Wingers?" I'm linking over to that, but I also include several links within the article to a Common Cause petition, a letter to the DOJ to have them look into the issue as far as vacating the Citizens United case due to conflicts of interest disclosed or otherwise by Clarence Thomas and Antonin Scalia, both of whom met with these groups secretly, incredibly, but they did it. Click on that letter. Also, a couple of links to protectourelections.org. And you can just go on over there, protectourelections.org, which, by way of disclosure, since I believe in disclosure, is a campaign set up by velvetrevolution.us, a group that that the Brad Blog helped to found. We have a couple of links there to petitions calling on Eric Holder and the DOJ to bring criminal charges criminal charges against Clarence Thomas for 20 years of falsifying his disclosure forms. If people in Egypt can stand up against the possibility of torture and death, trying to get justice, the least you could do is click on an internet petition. Pretty please? Go to protectourelections.org, go to commoncause.org, go to Bradblog. If you want accountability, you need to stand up and demand it. They ain't going to give it to you because these are real bad guys out there. But if we want it, we can do something about it, but we need to start raising some hell. Okay, speaking of raising hell, I'll just put this out here. Here was someone who said this. Who do you suppose said this? And by the way, we're going to be joined with Ernest Canning, attorney. He's going to tell us who said this in a minute. But let me put it out there to you. Corporate quote. This is a quote. Corporations have been enthroned, and an era of corruption in high places will follow. And the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudices of the people until all wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the public is destroyed. That after corporations have been enthroned. Who do you suppose said that? And when did they say it? We'll find out right now. Joining me is Ernest Canning, an active member of the California State Bar since 1977. He has received both undergraduate and graduate degrees in political science, as well as a Juris Doctor. He's a Vietnam vet, and most prestigiously, he is the legal affairs analyst at bradblog.com. He joins us now to tell us who said that and much more. Hey, Ernie, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, Brad. How are you?
I'm very good. All right. Well, you found this quote. Corporations have been enthroned.
I got to make a correction to
it. All right.
Way.
Yeah. What? Oh, you. Why is that?
Because it isn't until, and the public is destroyed, it's the republic is destroyed.
Ah, until, the, oh, actually, no, the correction is mine. I misread it there. So it's upon, I'll read it again. Corporations have been enthroned, and an era of corruption in high places will follow, and the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudices of the people until all wealth is aggregated in a few hands, and the republic, there we go, is destroyed. That's a very serious charge, a very scary. I'm guessing this must be who? Dennis Kucinich, Ron Paul?
Obviously some commie pinko. And if you recall, Brad, when I first read it to you, I was asking you to guess which president of the United States gave that, and we kept backing up and backing up. But the amazing thing is, because it tells us how long this problem has been with us in this country, is that the guy who said that was President Abraham Lincoln, and he said it in 1864.
Which it was just amazing when I heard that there was Lincoln warning about corporations. I don't know, Ernie, if you heard when I opened the show by announcing that Abraham Lincoln was a socialist because he formed the Transcontinental Railroad, as Vice President Biden pointed out today. So he was a socialist, and apparently he hates corporation. He hates business, or as they now call them, he hated job creators, I guess.
Well, you know, the interesting thing in this, Brad, and it kind of ties in with the article that I have that you posted today at the Brad blog. Thank you. But Kevin Phillips, an historian, wrote in Wealth and Democracy, and he talks about how basically it's the period after Lincoln dies, after 1865, is what we call the first Gilded Age.
Mm-hmm.
And you really have to look at this stuff historically to really understand what's going on. And he talks about that where they have all this laissez-faire myth about, you know, how these people make their money in the markets and all this stuff, that he says corporations and railroads took their favors, enormous ones that helped produce the world's biggest fortunes, by all but seizing key portions of the federal and state government. And what they did during that time, in addition to seizing the governments, was they packed the courts with business-friendly people. And that's how you got to this corporate personhood in a decision that came down in 1888.
That sounds terribly familiar. All right, we got to take a quick break here. We're speaking with Ernest A. Canning, attorney and legal affairs analyst at bradblog.com. I am Brad from that same blog, and we're going to be back with much more on this and a look at the scam that is, frankly, military foreign aid, more U.S. corporate welfare, I'm afraid. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy tonight and all week long. Glad you could join us. Please stay with us. Much more ahead.
Butterflies and sabers and moonbeams and fairy tales. That's all she ever thinks.
There must be some way out of here, said the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief.
We'll try to give you some relief. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, in for Mike Malloy, 23 minutes after the hour. Speaking with attorney Ernest Canning about a number of things, amongst them his article today at BradBlog, asking, is corporate personhood even valid under the existing Constitution, frankly? This question came up for yet another test in this Citizens United decision last year, this horrific Citizens United decision. Now people are trying to figure out what to do to it, pushing for constitutional amendments, but getting anything to happen in this country with this media that we have that is owned by the very corporations who would be hurt by a finding that, in fact, corporations are not people. All right, Ernie, so you quoted Abraham Lincoln warning about corporations. What's that?
It was great to hear a little Bob Dylan in between.
There you go. See, we aim to please. Tony, another kudos for you, sir. We talked about corporations, Abraham Lincoln warning about corporations, and that the wealth would be aggregated into a few hands and the republic would be destroyed. Nobody listened, apparently. We went into the Gilded Age, and it really took Teddy Roosevelt to come in and begin busting the trusts at the beginning of the 20th century before anything changed.
The biggest change, I think, really, and it was part of the problem, even when both Roosevelts were in, there was a problem with the courts, although it changed under FDR. But if you remember, you had the thing with the court-packing experience in the other direction, because FDR ran into so many things blocking the New Deal. What the courts did, and what the Supreme Court did all during that era in the late 19th century and into the early part of the 20th century, was that they tried to use a concept called substantive due process to basically overturn all the state police powers that aren't designed to protect the welfare of its citizens in favor of corporate power. And that's really been the struggle all the way through, and what you have with the current Federalist Society is trying to go back to that. And where the corporate personhood came up, and it was actually, I said 1888, is 1886.
Right.
When they decided it using the 14th Amendment Due Process Clause. And when they decided it, they used this cryptic reasoning where they just said, gee, all of us think it applies, so we don't even want to hear argument on it. And what happens is that basically goes unchallenged until 1938, when Justice Hugo Black writes a dissenting opinion where he just clearly says, hey, look at the language of the 14th Amendment. And then he's later joined in 1949 by Justice Douglas, and they're both saying the same thing. If you look at the language, these people that claim to be strict constructionists, but if you read the language, the first sentence of the 14th Amendment says, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States. Well, they took that and said, well, born or naturalized, a corporation is not born or naturalized, so they're not a person within the meaning of the 14th Amendment.
Exactly. Which part of the word person do you not understand? And well, we're going to talk about what we can do about it. I got to get to a quick break. Speaking with Ernie Canning, attorney and Brad Blog contributor. We'll also get to your calls, I hope. 877-520-1150. If you're on the line right now, please hang on. We'll try to get to everybody here. And next hour, open lines, 877-520-1150. Brad in for Mike. A whole lot more show straight ahead. Bit of breaking news here tonight. The Patriot Act fails on the House floor. A plan to extend a couple of three controversial provisions of the Patriot Act. The plan to do it with little debate failed on Tuesday night as a group of Republicans joined a majority of Democrats in voting no. Yep, we're going to have more on that in the next hour. Good to see. Good to see. All right. I'll give you some more details on that in a bit. We're speaking with Ernest Canning, California attorney, and BradBlog.com's legal affairs analyst, and who wrote today, move to amend, but it's corporate is corporate personhood valid even under existing constitution? And Ernie, before the break, you had referred to Hugo Black. In a 1938 case, a dissenting opinion, where he, as you describe him, a strict constructionist who had once said, and I quote, Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. I read no law abridging to mean no law abridging. So he was pretty strict on that point, at least. He also wrote that I do not believe the word person is in the 14th Amendment to include corporations. This is similar to what Sandra Sotomayor said recently during the Citizens United case. She said that it was the courts who, quote, created corporations as persons, gave birth to corporations as persons, and that an argument could be made that that was the court's error to start with, imbuing a creature of state law with human characteristics. I would say so. And Ernie, it seems that so many of the problems we seem to be facing today, which are just getting worse, all come back to this corporate personhood idea that allows these corporations to do any damn thing they want.
Well, in fact, I think what the difference is between what Lincoln warned as to the danger to the republic has become the danger to the world. And I think that what you're seeing in Egypt today is an extension of basically corporations becoming a corporate empire globally.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, I wrote another piece on that that deals with specifically empire and what we call military foreign aid, or actually foreign aid period. You know, that the word foreign aid conjures up this idea that we're helping some poor, starving people, but generally the aid is, as John Perkins reveals in his groundbreaking work as a former, what he self-described, economic hitman. And the other author that I quoted, mm-hmm. William Hartung, was talking about specifically the military aid that we're pouring into Egypt. And what you really have is corporate welfare. And what they do is they rope these countries in to becoming extremely indebted. And the money that supposedly the foreign aid never leaves the United States. It goes from the IMF or the World Bank or some other banks to either major construction companies or to the military-industrial complex. And these people are raking in this money. In exchange, you see things everywhere from sophisticated weaponry to the tear gas that's being used on the demonstrators. And at least, you know, we're still making something in the United States because tear gas cans have made in the U.S.
Unfortunately, yeah, that's what we're making. And that was, again, this part of this military foreign aid that, like you say, the money actually goes to U.S. corporations. It's more, as you called it, corporate welfare.
It is, and it's really just a small part of it, because when you start going into the military budget,
uh-huh.
and you look at how much of the world spends, the figures I had, I think this was from 2009, the world spent $1.531 trillion on the military, which was a 49% increase since 2000. And I noted that while 46...
That's the world, right, Ernie? That's the entire world, okay?
0.5% of that is the United States direct military spending.
How much?
And then the 46.5% of the $1.531 trillion.
Okay, that's all done by the U.S., 45% of it. All right.
Yeah, 46.5%.
46.
And that doesn't count the monies that, you know, you may say, well, gee, Egypt spent $2 billion on the military. But if it turns out that 1.8 million is actually coming from the U.S. taxpayer, mm-hmm. to buy those weapons for this torture regime in Egypt, you see that our numbers are actually much higher than the 46.5%. And all this money is going to a few corporations to basically make a few people at the top of those corporations wealthy beyond your wildest imagination.
We're speaking with Ernie Canning, attorney and contributor at the Brad Blog. Our phone numbers are 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. You want to take a quick call or two here, Ernie?
Sure.
All right, let's go to Mark in San Francisco. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, I think we need to impeach some Supreme Court judges.
Well, you think so? Why?
Well, basically, Roberts lied, said he wouldn't be an activist judge, and he should be impeached for that. I mean, Thomas, obviously, he should be convicted of his crime and be impeached.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, unless we can hold these people accountable for, you know, basically being activist judges and making decisions based on a political point of view and not, you know, in what they were put up there for is to be a judge to, you know, be fair and do right by the country. And obviously they haven't. Thomas was also one of the ones that appointed George Bush and took our right to vote away.
Well, that's right. Mark, let me get Ernie's thoughts on this. I don't know if you heard the previous hour, Ernie, but we were talking about the crimes of Clarence Thomas. I don't know that you can impeach someone for being an activist judge when they said they wouldn't be, but it seems to me you could impeach them for committing the kind of crimes that Clarence Thomas has. But how do you get that past a now Republican U.S. House of Representatives?
Well, I don't think you're going to get it past the current House of Representatives, no matter what evidence you come up with.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't stop we, the people, from making accountability, not just impeachment of these judges, but accountability, which covers what you've been covering for the last few days.
Years. Make that years.
of the 2012 election, and that if the current crop of quote-unquote leaders, which mm-hmm. includes the president and the attorney general are unwilling to uphold the rule of law, then we need to seriously look at getting people who will uphold the rule of law. And ultimately, just like the Egyptians took to the street, we still have, I guess in some states, ballots.
Yeah. There are some.
Others, we have machines that we have no idea whether our votes are being counted.
That's right.
But, you know, where we do have a ballot, we should be exercising it intelligently, and we should be insisting that those who are supposed to represent us uphold the rule of law, which includes bringing an end to this corporate personhood.
Yeah.
Brad?
Yes, sir. Yes, Mark?
Yeah. What I wanted to add is also they've been openly involved with Republican Party, fundraising and everything else.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's so outrageous. I mean, unless we can just stand up and scream, even if they won't impeach him, we should demand from these people that we're not going to put up with this. This is an outrage. This is a disgrace to our democracy that they're going to go ahead and be openly involved with the Republican Party and make decisions that are obviously based on political.
And you're referring back to these meetings that Scalia and Thomas have had with the Tea Party, with the Koch Industries, in their secret meetings. Well, Mark, what are you prepared to do about it, sir?
Well, I think we all need to get together as progressives and demand that these people resign, and resign because of the fact that they're openly biased.
Mm-hmm. And how do we do that? Are we going to hit the streets? Are we going to go to D.C.? Are we going to find our own Tutter Square and stay there until action is taken? Or are we just going to talk about it and move on and watch the Super Bowl, and that'll be that?
Well, I think that this is this cause right here would be the cause to basically go there and not leave till if we have to be removed.
I hear you, brother, and I wonder if anyone else hears you. I appreciate your call, Mark. Really do. Thanks a bunch for touching base here.
Okay. Keep up the fight, Brad.
Thank you, brother, and you. It gets obviously so disparaging at time because we see problem after problem after problem, and people, even when they did take action, even when they did do something about it, Ernie Canning, back in 2003, before the Iraq War, we had some of the largest demonstrations this country has ever seen, but the media didn't bother to report it. So if the media doesn't report it, it didn't really happen. So we see ourselves in this this catch 22, and now you're talking about, you pointed us to at Brad Blog today, to this effort in Vermont to have a constitutional amendment to essentially say that corporations are, surprise surprise, not people. Can such a constitutional amendment actually get anywhere, given the media landscape, given the political landscape, Ernie Canning?
Well, you know, that's an open question, but I think Vermont seems to be a step ahead of the rest of us at times, and they certainly have the right idea. The problem is that the particular method that they are moving forward with has never been done before, and the method involves getting 2/3 of the state legislatures to call on Congress to open up a national convention to propose the amendment. The other method would be to get 2/3 of both houses of Congress to propose the thing, but I think you're not going to have that happen. I mean, you can't even get from this current Congress. You can't even get them to have full disclosure for people like Koch Industries.
Yeah, and you can't get them to bring accountability when they find something that is so obviously a crime, certainly a crime enough. I have argued that I think the right wing would be going crazy had it been, you know, Elena Kagan failing to disclose hundreds of thousands of dollars she received from Planned Parenthood, or Sonia Sotomayor receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars from Acorn. Had they failed to disclose that, I think this would have been round the clock. Fox News, Drudge Report, right wing, you know, calls for her to step down, calls for impeachment, calls for criminal charges to be brought. And in that case, they would be correct to have done so. But here it's Clarence Thomas, and it's, you know, nobody's even talking about it. No one other than me, you, Ernie, Nancy Goldstein today over at Alternet, and very, very few other folks. All right, hang with us, Ernie. We're going to get to some calls here, 877-520-1150. Ernest Canning is with us, taking calls on all of these matters. And then next hour, open lines, whatever is on your mind or on mine. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Well, they took him and they beat him.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show, 52 minutes after the hour. Your calls coming up on anything you want to talk about in the next hour, 877-520-1150. We got some folks on the line, and we are joined by my guest, Brad Blog contributor Ernie Canning. I should say I am Brad, Brad Friedman of Brad Blog, in for Mike Malloy. Let's grab a few more. Do I have it here, Ernie? I just want to read this one more time because I think people need to hear it. This quote, this important quote, corporations have been enthroned and an era of corruption in high places will follow. And the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudices of the people until all wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic is destroyed. No, that wasn't a Tea Party activist. That wasn't Ron Paul. That wasn't Dennis Kucinich. That was President Abraham Lincoln in 1864 offering a warning that we failed to listen to. Let's go to, oh, he left. Someone had a question about Glenn Greenwald. Well, we'll have to get back to them. Ernie, I'm going to go to a call here. AC in St. Petersburg. Hey, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, AC. What's on your mind, sir?
You guys are the greatest.
You're very kind.
So are you, sir. Ernie, specifically, here's what's wrong with corporate personhood and unlimited bribery, or if you want to call it campaign contributions from corporations. I was watching Fox this afternoon, and Neil Cabuto, the business guy, had the governor from Georgia on, and he's a Republican, and he's speaking for the 20 Republican governors, many of them that were elected this last cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And what they object to in Obamacare or Obama's health care plan and the implementation, here's what they object to. They don't like the mandated, designated benefits level, you know, like the complexity of what it covers and everything. And they want some flexibility. And the translation that I have when he says they want some flexibility on that level of mandated campaign benefits, you know, benefits, is what they want is they want to let the big insurance companies that dominate a market come in and sell crappy garbage junk that they can make a huge profit on because it doesn't kick in till way up there in the catastrophic level. So you're paying them all this money, and that's how they make their money.
Do you have a specific question? Because we're coming up at the top of the hour, real quick.
We need to throw out this corporate personhood, and how can we do this? Look, the majority.
I hear
of
you,
Brett.
Let me get an answer. I hear you, pal. Let me get a thought from Ernie because we're coming up at the top of the hour. Thanks, AC. I do appreciate your call, brother. So what do we do? What's the best way to go to get rid of this corporate personhood once and for all, Ernie Canning?
Well, I think because we're not going to see a major change in the makeup of the court anytime soon. I mean, unfortunately, Sotomayor didn't even put that opinion in her in joining the dissenting opinion in it, and I don't think that it's going to come from the court. I think we need a constitutional amendment, but we need a major fundamental revolutionary change, peaceful revolutionary change by the people of this country. They need to understand that it isn't government per se that's the problem. It is corporations, and it is the power of billionaires that are creating the greatest division in wealth in the history of this country. We're in economic conditions that are tracking much of those that we haven't seen since the Great Depression. I wanted to add briefly, Brad, it was an update to my piece on the military.
And very quickly, only because I got about 20 seconds.
Right. The Boston Globe reported, there was a Pentagon report that shows that there are more than 100 military contractors who committed civil or criminal fraud between 2007 and 2009, and yet billions of dollars continue to flow to those same contractors. So you look at the problem with Clarence Thomas, you look across the board at torture, you look at everything else. We do not have a government of laws, and that's where the problem lies.
It sure does. And the question remains, what will we do about it? The makeup of the court, well, you know, if we had a real media out there, the makeup of the court could change because they would look at what Clarence Thomas did and said, you know what? This guy not only doesn't belong on the courts, he belongs in jail. Hey, Ernie, great talking to you, sir. Thank you always for your contributions at bradblog.com. They're one of the highlights, if you ask me. Thanks for all the work that you're doing, brother. I really appreciate it, and thanks for joining us tonight.
My pleasure, Brad.
All right, much more straight ahead, including your calls. If you're on the line, hang on there. Otherwise, give us a shout, 877-520-1150. These are your public airwaves. Use them or lose them more than you already have. Stay with us. Welcome back, Truth Seekers. You have come to the right place. Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen investigative journalist, troublemaker, blogger, muckraker, all-around swell fellow. Broadcasting live from Los Angeles, beautiful downtown Burbank, the K-Talk AM 1150 studios. For the rest of the week here, as Mike Malloy is out and about, the Malloys are out and about on the high seas. Tony, they're on the high seas. They're on the high seas, Tony. The Malloys are, where are they? There we go. That's right. They're out there on a progressive cruise, enjoying themselves with all the other progressives, the lefties, the commies, the pinkos. Having a good time. But now we're back here, also having a good time. Glad you could join us. Please, it's not too late to stop by the chat room. A very lively bunch over there. And you can meet the lovely hostess, Desi Doyen. She's holding things down. You may have just heard her, by the way, if you're listening up in San Francisco on Green 960. She is my co-host and managing editor of the Green News Report, which you can hear at greennews.bradblog.com. But if you don't hear it on your progressive radio station, you need to call them and complain. They ought to carry it. It's free. It's only 6 minutes. It's green, independent, green news analysis and snarky comment using your public radio waves to tell the truth, because someone has to at this point. Okay, we're going to get to your calls in a minute. 877-520-1150. Whatever's on your mind, whatever we've been talking about tonight or anything else, because as I say, these are your public airwaves. Use them before you lose them, even any more than you already have. The Patriot Act has failed to be extended on the House floor tonight. But it will be back, reports Raw Story, a plan that would have seen the House of Representatives extend controversial provisions of the Patriot Act with little debate failed Tuesday night as a group of Republicans joined a majority of Democrats in voting no. That's right. The House voted 277 to 148 for the Patriot Act extension, but that was 23 votes short of the two-thirds majority needed to pass it under a procedure that allows bills that aren't controversial to pass quickly. You see, because they spent the last 8 years with the Patriot Act not being controversial, but now suddenly it is, because some of the Tea Party folks apparently have noticed that it is the Constitution-killing Tea Party Patriot Act. But it appears that the bill was controversial enough to convince some two dozen Tea Party-backed Republican freshmen to join a majority of Democrats in voting against it, as reported by The Hill. The measure is now expected to return to the House floor for a regular vote, which would require a simple majority to pass. If House members vote then as they did tonight, the extension will pass easily. Well, let's give it up. Let's give it up to a couple of these Tea Party folks, frankly. I thought you'd never hear me say that, eh? Yeah, I said it. If they're going to stand up for the Constitution, you see, most of them have been tricked into believing they give a damn about the Constitution, but they don't. So I was happy to see here. I mean, here's an example, because I was going to talk about this story before we knew whether it would get the vote tonight or not. But Wall Street Journal earlier, a few days ago, had said that even among the Tea Party activists, opinion about extending the Patriot Act is divided. Coordinators of one umbrella group, Tea Party Patriots, said they discussed the Patriot Act during a conference call this week, and they found a diversity of views. Ryan Hecker, a Houston lawyer and Tea Party organizer, says he believes that the act has helped curb terrorism and, quote, the movement should remain agnostic. Okay, well, violates the Constitution, but we'll remain agnostic. Laura Boatwright, a Tea Party organizer in Ontario, California, says the act is unconstitutional. Good for you, Laura, because it is. Adding, we can have national security in other ways without making all the American people relinquish their liberty. Yeah, do you think? Good for you. Good for you, you see? There I am, supporting Tea Party people. What do you think of that? Well, you can let me know at 877-520-1150. You can also Twitter me at the Bradblog. I think I already mentioned the chat room, right? Okay. You can go to bradblog.com, jump in over there. Let's get to a couple of calls here. Willie, Chattanooga, Tennessee. Hey, Will, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. What's on your mind, sir?
Hi, Brad.
Hey.
I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Dune.
I have not. I have not.
Okay. It would be an interesting movie for you to watch, but I've got 2 points I wanted to make tonight. But it's about corporations taking over the government and forcing the people out.
Yep.
And there's a line in there called that says, the sleeper must awaken. And the sleeper is the one who rages the people to take out the government.
That's in the movie Dune?
Yes,
okay.
Dune, D-U-N-E. It's a wonderful movie.
Yeah, I know.
And, but anyhow, you know, I got to thinking, because I listened to you last night, and so I made sure I listened to you tonight. And so what I wanted to point out about that is, you know, you've sort of awakened the sleeper in me to get involved. And so I think maybe that's a good line that we should all start pushing is, you know, our sleepers in us must awaken.
Awaken the sleepers. Yeah.
Yeah, to take back our government. But the other point I wanted to come across is, you know, these corporations, I'm a truck driver.
Yeah.
And we are never paid for all of our work, okay? And truck drivers are out here, and we haven't had a raise since the 80s.
Mm. And what do you mean you're not always paid for all of your work? What do you mean by that?
They only pay us for a certain amount of miles that we drive.
Right.
And so they skim 10% off of the top.
Hmm. Well, are they entitled to do that because they're agents? They get their 10%.
No.
They're doing that illegally?
they're doing it illegally, but nobody will do anything about it. There's only just now they have started a class action lawsuit against one of the largest trucking companies, which is in court now.
And what,
it's a class action lawsuit of 30,000 people.
What company is that that's in court?
Swift.
Swift?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, transportation.
Good. All right. Well, let's hope there's some accountability there. Yeah.
Yeah. What I was thinking, you know, is you were talking about what are you going to do and how are you going to do it, and you know, you're going to go to the squares, you're going to stand up, what you're going to do.
Yep.
You know, I don't know if you ever remember the song Convoy.
Yeah, of course I do.
Well, I tell you what, truckers are everywhere out here, and they're really pissed off without getting raises and not getting paid all of their miles.
Yeah.
And we're from one side of the country to the other, and I tell you, if the people went into the town squares or the Capitol,
I like it.
Come in,
yeah,
and shut down every freaking road into the Capitol. We could take back this country,
dude. I'm hearing you, and I hope the rest of the convoy is hearing you. That's one of the best damn ideas I've heard in a long time, man.
Because they can't move us.
Yep. No, we can't, and we can't do without you, and we can't avoid you if you guys all show up together, man. I do like that idea. You guys still use those CB radios out there in trucker land these days?
We do, but rarely does anybody really get on them anymore.
Yeah.
Just because there's so much fighting because of politics.
Imagine that, but
I tell you, if somebody were to stand up for truckers and say you're going to get paid what you're worth and bring them all together and show something, you could realign truckers into a full force.
I like,
and they could take this country back.
I like the idea, Will. I like it a lot. Keep tuning in. I'm going to be here all week long, and I really appreciate your nice compliment there. And I'm glad we have awakened the sleeper. Hey, stay in touch, Will, okay?
Thank you, bud.
Keep raising hell.
All right. Bye.
All right. Have a great night. What is that? Is that the convoy? Yeah. Here comes the convoy. I like it. Oh, man. All right. You're listening to Brad in from Mike Malloy, Awakening the Sleeper, getting the convoy, heading to you. Brad in from Malloy, stay with us.
This here's a duck, and you want to back off them hogs? Good, 10, 4, about 5 miles or so. 10, roger, them hogs is getting intense up here.
Well, you wonder why I always dress in black, why you never see bright colors on my back, and why does my appearance seem to have a somber tone? Well, there's a reason for the things that I have on. I wear the black for the poor and the beaten down, living in the hopeless, hungry side of town. I wear it for the prisoner who has long paid for his crime, but is there because he's a victim of the time.
Yep.
I wear the black.
We're wearing black tonight. Little Johnny Cash there. That's for you, Will. Really appreciate your call, my friend. And we'll take all or half of the truckers in this fight, whichever ones you can round up into your convoy. 877-520-1150, Brad in for Mike Malloy. And in the chat room, Eddie just wrote, now, Brad, did you read the ruling? They, corporations, are equal to unions and should be able to donate like unions. Well, if you think that any union has the power, has the profits, has the extra money, man, you could take ExxonMobil alone, and the profits they made, the record profits that they made, this year, quarter after quarter, year after year, all of the unions combined don't have the kind of power that these corporations do. That's frankly, in my opinion at least, just a silly argument. Maybe you feel differently. Let's go to Joel in Berkeley, California. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Joel. What's on your mind?
Hey, Brad. How are you doing?
I'm okay.
Yeah, I think the snarky comments are the best part of the green news, too. But anyway.
You're very kind. I hope Desi didn't hear you say that, though. Okay. Anyway.
She makes snarky comments, too.
She does. She does.
So I was hoping to talk to, you know, have Ernie on the line, too, but my phone battery's died.
Ah.
You know, when the decision came out, the Citizens United decision came out.
Citizens United, right?
I read Glenn Greenwald on it, and I guess I wasn't too surprised. I don't know if you've seen his take on it, but he's... I guess it's kind of a devil's advocate position, at least for our discussion. He says basically that although he's troubled by some aspects of the ruling, the Supreme Court got a lot right. He kind of calls himself, he cops to being a First Amendment absolutist.
Right.
And on that basis, he says, you know, first of all, he says a lot of stuff. I can't really summarize it all that well on radio, but I think one of the things that's worth mentioning is that he says, you know, even with the campaign finance laws that existed prior to Citizens United, things were really, really bad, and he didn't see that it could get that much worse even with Citizens United. And basically, from his absolutist position, you know, Congress shouldn't be in the business of restricting or regulating political speech at all in any way.
This goes back to the idea that money equals political speech, and frankly, I just reject that argument. I mean, if I have all the free speech in the world that I want, and I can use my money to buy it, and it's me against the other person, Walmart, I guess Walmart's going to have a hell of a lot more free speech than me. I mean, I just don't accept that, you know, the argument money does not equal speech, listen, I agree with Greenwald on just about everything, and I'd have to go back to his argument on Citizens United. I recall reading it at the time, but I've sort of lost track of what it was now. I appreciate what he writes. I appreciate people's opinions on this. The problem is very few people hear Glenn Greenwald, hear most of Glenn Greenwald's argument, because it is the corporations who own the airwaves, who make the arguments, and that's who we have to hear because they have the most money, therefore they have the most speech, and I just reject that, Joel.
Well, I'm looking for a way. I don't like the result of the Citizens United decision, and I don't think that Greenwald likes it either, and he's certainly on board with us in saying that corporations have far too much power and wealthy people in general have far too much power in the political sphere. He doesn't think that campaign finance laws, at least of this kind, are the way to do it. I don't know. I mean, I'm really ambivalent. I'm not calling because I necessarily like what he said, or I hate or I love the Citizens United decision.
I appreciate the conversation, but because it's so rare that we get to have them, frankly, on the air these days. I just reject that idea. You know, corporations, they do not die. They do not breathe. They can't. I guess they can sort of get married. They can merge, right? But you know, they're not living, breathing entities. They live forever. And I can't remember who it was yesterday. I don't know if it was in the chat room or on Twitter. So my apologies to whoever mentioned this. But if corporations are people, then I guess slavery is illegal since corporations are allowed to buy and own other corporations.
Greenwald himself, as well as I, are totally sympathetic to the idea that corporations aren't persons.
Well, that's where
But what he thinks that he says, look, there's a lot of merit to the argument that they shouldn't be persons. But what he's saying in terms of Citizens United is so what? What if they aren't persons? It still doesn't really, it shouldn't and doesn't affect whatever rights they have. And the money speech issue also, he actually has a, you know, he wrote a comment in the letters section where he addressed that point.
And I got to, you know what, Joel, and I hate to do this, but the corporations are telling me I got to take a break here. So, Joel, I appreciate the call, and I would point folks towards Glenn Greenwald for anything and everything. And by the way, he's got dengue, how do you say it, dengue fever down there in Rio right now. And so our best wishes go out to him for a quick recovery. Thanks for the call, Joel. Much more straight ahead, 877-520-1150. Brad in for Malloy. are. 877-520-1150 is our phone number. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy all week long. Glad you could join me, and glad the truckers are now tuning in. Mike in the bradblog.com chat room jumps in to say, okay, Brad, I'm a driver too by profession. CRST van expedited only pay 16 cents per mile. Try living on that. Yeah. Well, you know what? If you heard our the caller in the last segment, Will was great. He says he was one of the sleepers who has now been awoken. If we can get the, how do you get people to pay attention? They don't pay attention when they show up by the, you know, the tens and hundreds of thousands in D.C. like they did before the Iraq war. I'll just bet you if a few hundred, a few thousand truckers showed up with their rigs and didn't leave, people might start paying attention because it's kind of hard to handcuff an 18-wheeler and pull it out of the way. Hundreds and hundreds of them. Welcome aboard, guys. We'd love to have you. 877-520-1150. Let's go to Roger. Thanks for holding on, Roger, in West L.A. What's on your mind, sir?
Yeah, hi, Brad. Yesterday there was the news that Bush didn't want to go to Switzerland, Geneva, Switzerland.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may get handcuffed there.
Yeah. for torture charges, as we talked about last night, yeah.
Yeah, Geneva Convention violation.
Yep.
So, and also, if you notice...
And isn't that just like him, by the way, to go to Geneva? He was going to Geneva, Switzerland, on the 9th anniversary when he decided that he could do anything he wanted in violation of the Geneva Convention. All right, sorry, Roger, go ahead.
Yeah, and then now if you notice also, you see that Cheney is not traveling abroad either. You know, he goes from D.C. to Wyoming, that's about it. And Rumsfeld, he had this book come out. He didn't go to Europe to promote his book either.
No, listen, these people are now prisoners in the country that they broke. And that's just fine by me. Well, I mean, I want them to really be prisoners and face some real accountability. But I love the fact that they can't leave the country, that other countries will bring accountability where we won't. So,
yeah, so what I'm saying is there is a no-fly list which has Osama bin Laden, the underwear bomber, shoe bomber.
Yeah.
And now added on to that list is Bush, Cheney,
indeed.
The no-fly list.
Yeah, I hear you. As well they should be. They are very, very dangerous men. Hey, Roger, thanks for the call, buddy. I appreciate it. Have a good night. Speaking of which, by the way, I hope to get to this tomorrow night. By the way, John Fugelsang will be joining us tomorrow night from New York, your old pal. And Tom Tomorrow will be with us on Thursday, if you know him and love him, as I do. So a big week ahead and much more that I haven't told you about yet. But anyway, this from, I'm not going to get to this yet. I want to try to hit it tomorrow. Speaking of Glenn Greenwald, because I sent him a copy of this to get his thoughts. But I've been going back and forth with David Frum, George Bush's old speechwriter, who coined the phrase axis of evil. Because as I mentioned yesterday, he's calling on Obama to speak out against the Bush arrest threat in Switzerland, where Bush was going to go and speak, but had to cancel the trip due to the possibility that he could be arrested out there for torture charges under the UN Convention Against Torture. So I invited David Frum to be on the show tonight, as I had mentioned I had done yesterday. And he declined because he's in the Middle East right now. And I appreciate that. He'll be it's the middle of the night out there in the Middle East. I did ask him, however, to give me some comment that I could use on the record as to whether he simply rejects the UN Convention of Torture, which requires all signatories to prosecute torturers and war criminals. Does he reject that? Well, he gave me his answer and sent me a comment, and we'll try to get to that tomorrow. How's that for a tease? 877-520-1150. Let's go to Joyce, listening probably on Green 960 up there in San Francisco. Hey, Joyce, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, Brad. That's right. Green 960.
All right.
So last hour you said we should put people in power who will uphold the rule of law.
Mm-hmm.
And I say let's start at the top. How about RFK Jr. for prez and Mike Papantonio for attorney general? We'd get some rule of law.
No, that man, that's what I'm talking about. Talk about your ring of fire. Yeah, well, you know what? I would settle for just Papantonio for AG in the DOJ. I would settle for anybody who wasn't sound asleep as the attorney general. Papantonio comes to mind. I'd love to see Russ Feingold. I think he needs a job. How about him for AG?
Right. How about
Jesus.
For Department of Defense in a RFK administration?
There you go.
The list goes on. Maybe if you talk to Mike on the cruise, they can stir up some.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, I don't get to go on that cruise. But maybe we can. Well, actually, and I can't even get Bobby RFK Jr. in because he's on the cruise, too. So see there.
Yeah.
But I love your idea. And, you know, keep talking about him. Keep raising hell. Keep insisting that something gets done. And frankly, I'm liking this trucker idea more and more.
I love the trucker idea, too. We can do it all.
Trucker idea. All right. Hey, thanks for the call, Joyce. I do appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
All right. Have a good night. Bring on the truckers. Let's go to, I screwed that up. Let me see. There we go. Let's go to, Pam also. And so a lot of San Francisco people calling, 877-520-1150. If you want to get in, just a few more minutes left before this program will be history. Hey, Pamela, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. What's on your mind?
Hi. Maybe I thought we could bring it all together. And talking of torture, did you see the Bill O'Reilly, Barack Obama interview before the Super Bowl?
Yes, I did. Yeah,
I get some snarky comments from you if you wait for Tom tomorrow?
Are you implying that it was torture watching it? That
it was torture watching it because I just felt there was such disrespect.
Yeah.
And he was, and Bill O'Reilly is such an airhead, and he just made a comment. It just drove me nuts. But I wanted to hear you because you're smarter than I am. So you tell me.
I don't know that I'm smarter than you, but I think, and I had predicted this prior to the thing. I said that because a lot of people don't know that Bill O'Reilly. Every time you see him on the Fox thing, news channel, news in quotes, he's doing that's he doesn't do any of that live. It's all pre-recorded. All his interviews are all pre-recorded, and he can edit them as he needs to. And so when I saw that he was going to be sitting down with Obama and it was going to be live, I said, oh, my money is on Obama. So I think I was right there. I think the fact that O'Reilly was interrupting him was rude. I think that he looked like the jerk. Obama looked great. And I thought when he tried to kiss Obama's ass near the end there, tried to kiss up to him, and he said, what did he say? He said,
about the game?
No, when he said, I hope I've been fair. I hope you think I'm fair to you. And Obama just chuckled, and he put his hand out, and he said, it's been a pleasure, Bill. Wouldn't respond to it at all. Thought it was awesome. I thought it was great. I love it when he goes out there. I love the same reason that I love going on right wing shows. Same reason I love right wingers when they come on to this show. You know, let people see them for what they are in a fair environment. And when it's live and it's Bill O'Reilly and he can't edit it, people have a chance. And that's what Obama did. I think O'Reilly did not look very good. That's my opinion.
To us. But yeah. Thank you. But I think there's no hope because I think people that liked Bill O'Reilly before just thought he nailed that puppy.
Okay. Those people don't have much of a brain left anyway, so don't pay attention.
They're just getting worser and worser. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the call, Pam. Speaking of which, where was that? I had this on my... where is this? Hang on here. I'll find it. I had the... I can't ever find. Damn it! All right. Oh well. I had a thing on Obama. Oh, here we go. Yeah, no, right in front of me. Americans divided on a second term for Obama. Polls show, 2 years into his presidency, Americans remain largely split on whether Barack Obama deserved a second term in office, according to a poll published Tuesday. The survey by CNN and Opinion Research Corporation found 51% of Americans believed Obama would not win a second term. 47% said that he likely would. The results were largely the same as a similar poll published nearly 1 year ago when CNN found that 52% felt that Obama did not deserve a second term. I think they're just scaredy cats. Or maybe they're right. Let's go to, is that our buddy Tom in Riverside? Hey, Tom, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Hey, Tom Corbett, right?
That is right. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. One of so the rest of America knows, one of my great heroes, Tom Corbett, great election integrity activist down there in Riverside County, California, the home of the first county in this country to use 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems across the county back in 2000.
That's right.
What's on your mind, brother?
Well, brother, as you know,
yep.
The Board of Supervisors fired Barbara Dunmore 3 months ago.
One of the worst registrars of voters in the entire nation. And that's saying quite a bit, frankly.
It really is.
They fired her.
We've been looking, we the residents of the county, have been looking for a new registrar. And
yep.
It was announced today that we have a new registrar.
Uh-oh.
Her name is Carrie, that's K-A-R-I, Virgil, Z as in Victor, E-R-J-I-L, and Carrie Virgil was the chief deputy registrar of voters in Riverside County before she left to take the job of registrar of voters in San Bernardino County, which is the county that borders on Riverside.
Right.
San Bernardino County uses all the same equipment as Riverside does, all the same insecure
San Bernardino County, Sequoia, actually, they were the first ones to use the Sequoia touchscreen systems with the so-called paper trail back in 2004, which was illegally certified by the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission. But that was San Bernardino County. So now they use all the same equipment. So she's perfect for Riverside, is she not?
Well, of course. And she trained under Michelle Townsend, who was the registrar prior to Barbara Dunmore. And Michelle, of course, is the registrar who brought in the touchscreen voting back in the year 99 and 2000.
And you remember what she famously said, Michelle Townsend?
Famously said a lot of things.
The one where she said that it is, what was it?
It would take
100. It's 100% impossible to, now I got to go find that quote. She said it in one of the movies. I think it was Hacking Democracy in the Outtakes or something, where she said there has never been evidence that any vote has ever, that these machines could ever be hacked in any way, shape, or form
That it would take, over 1,000 people colluding together to be able to pull off any kind of change in the vote on this electronic vote system. That's how secure it is.
Well, I got to get to a break, Tom. You are Carrie Virgil, if that's how you say her name.
Virgil.
You are her worst nightmare because you, sir, are an informed citizen who gives a damn about oversight. And I hope you'll give her my best, make friends with her, and hold her accountable to doing the right thing. I got to get to a break, Tom.
Good talking to you, Brad.
Thanks.
Take care, buddy.
Thanks, brother. And you. All right. 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. Just a few more minutes left. We'll try to get in as many of you folks as we can if you want to give us a call. By the way, our show. Well, I'll tell you after this break. Brad in for Mike Malloy.
People say I'm crazy, doing what I'm doing. Well, they give me all kinds of warnings to save me from ruin.
My thanks tonight to our great engineer, Tony Sorrentino. Thank you, brother. Also to LA's K-Talk AM 1150. Keep it playing. Keep it playing. Producer, screener, chat room babeski, and, of course, my co-host and managing editor of the Green News Report, Desi Doyen. Thank you, Des. Of course, my thanks, as ever, to Mike and Kathy Malloy, wherever they may be on the high seas. Hope they're having a great time out there. They'll be back with you next week, but you'll have me instead for the rest of the week. I hope you don't mind. My thanks also to Common Cause's Bob Edgar and to Brad Blog's Ernie Canning for joining me as my guest tonight. Tomorrow night, we'll be joined by John Fugelsang and more surprises that we've yet to figure out. Two quick points. Well, let's see, a few. The bradblog.com chat room is great. And we will have not just the archives of tonight's show up there in an hour or two after I get some food, but also the archives of the chat room. And there's some great stuff in there tonight. Goal number one says Danta Zembro. I can't even pronounce it. Goal number one, equal no war. Ernie Canning, who's in the chat room tonight, says goal number two, people before profits. Orangutan says goal number three, election integrity reform. You get the idea. Some good folks in there, and those chat archives will also be up there tonight, so you can go listen to the program and read the chat archives at the same time. That is, if you're not already a member of the podcast subscriber over at MikeMalloy.com. If you're not, you should be supporting independent media, guys like Mike Malloy, who allow guys like me, bloggers, to show up and tell the truth over your public airwaves. 2 points about corporations. One, they can't get the death penalty. And two, they can't vote. And yet they get to buy a whole lot of them. Gene in San Francisco, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, Brad. There's a great documentary called The Corporations.
Yeah, it is great.
And this is what I came away with from seeing The Corporation, and I wanted to run this past you.
Yeah.
This is the approach I'd like to see us take toward controlling corporations that live these zombie, undead lifetimes.
Yep.
We need to repeal their ability to attain an open-ended status to exist. Because in the past, as this documentary explains, a U.S. corporation was licensed to form and existed only as long as it took to accomplish the purpose mm-hmm. of its license agreement. And I think this should again be the way corporate licensing is arranged.
Mm.
And no more open-ended corporate zombies.
Mm, I hear you. Well, and of course, I hear you, and I agree with you. Can't ever see it happening. But what I can see...
Well, we need some direction. We need something that we're demanding.
Well, I hear you. Let's start with a constitutional amendment that says all of the amendments in this Constitution, all of the everything in this Constitution applies to living, breathing, human beings only.
Yes.
Simple. One sentence. There's our constitutional amendment. How hard could that be? Not very hard if we have all the truckers show up and spell it out. Hey, Gene, I got to run. I appreciate your call. And keep up the good fight. All right, America, you keep up the good fight, too. This fight will continue throughout the week. Until tomorrow night when we will meet here, same Brad time, same Brad channel. You can find me at thebradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman for Mike Malloy. Keep it lit, America.